Sean stood up and began to unbutton his shirt, and then paused. She saw that at last he was uncertain, and his confusion amused and excited her. She nodded encouragement and beckoned again. His expression firmed, and he stripped off his shirt and threw it aside. Then he unbuckled his belt and let his shorts drop around his ankles. She drew breath sharply and felt the muscles on the inside of her thighs tense. She was not sure what she had expected, but protruding from a smoky haze of pubic hair, he was long and white and rigid. Here, as in so many other ways, he was almost fully matured. The lingering signs of childhood on his body were all the more titillating for this. He stood naked for only an instant, and then dived headfirst into the pool, to surface beside her, water streaming down his face, grinning like an imp. Immediately she ducked away, and he chased her. He was a stronger swimmer than she was, moving in the water like a young otter, and he caught her in the middle of the pool. They struggled together playfully, giggling and gasping, treading water, going under and bobbing up again. She was surprised by the hardness and strength of his body, and though she extended herself, he began to get the better of her. She was tiring, and she slowed her movements and let him rub himself against her. Cold water and exertion had softened him, but she felt him grow again, his hips slipping over her belly, probing instinctively at her. She hooked an arm around his neck and pulled his face down between her breasts. His entire body arched and convulsed, and for a moment she thought he had gone too far, and she reached down and squeezed him hard and painfully to stop him. Then, as he broke away, shocked by her assault, she turned and swam swiftly to the bank, dragged herself from the pool, and ran wet and naked to the summer house. She snatched up her towel, wiped her face dry, and, holding the towel in front of her, turned back to face him as he reached the door of the summer house behind her. He stood flushed and angry in the doorway, and they stared at each other, both of them panting heavily. Then, slowly, she lowered the towel and tossed it over the couch. Swinging her hips deliberately, she went to where he stood. "All right, Master Sean. We know you're worse than useless with a paintbrush. Let's see if there isn't anything else we can teach you." He was like a blank canvas on which she could trace her own designs, no matter how bizarre. There were things from which her other lovers had recoiled, and other acts that she had only imagined and never had the courage to suggest to a partner. At last she felt free of all constraint. It was as though he could read her intentions. She had only to start some new experiment, guide him just part of the way, and he picked it up with a greedy relish that astonished her and carried it through to a conclusion that she had not always fully foreseen, and which sometimes left her stunned. His strength and confidence increased with every one of their meetings. For the first time she had found something that did not swiftly pall. Gradually her existence seemed to centre around the summer house beside the pool, and she could not wait to reach it each evening. It required all her self-discipline to keep her hands off him in the art room. She could not trust herself to stand close to him, or to look at him directly during her classes. Then he initiated a new series of dangerous games. He would remain behind after class for just a few minutes. It had to be very quick, but risk of discovery enhanced the thrill for both of them. Once the janitor came in as they were busy, and it was so close, so exciting, that she thought she'd experienced heart failure at the climax. Sean was standing erect behind her desk, and she was kneeling in front of him. He had taken a handful of her hair and twisted it, holding her face against his lower body. "I am looking for Miss East," the janitor said from the doorway. He was a pensioner, almost 70 years of age, but out of vanity he refused to wear spectacles. "Is she here?" he demanded, peering at Sean myopically. "Hello, Mr. Brownlee. Miss East has gone to the staff common room already," Sean told him coolly, holding Claire by her hair, so she could not pull away from him. The janitor muttered unintelligibly and turned to leave the art room, when, to Claire's horror, Sean called him back. "Oh, Mr. Brownlee, can I give her a message for you?" he asked, and he and the janitor talked for almost a minute that seemed like all the ages, while she, screened by the desk, was forced to continue. She knew then, when she paused to think about it, that she was in over her head. She had seen glimpses of the cruelty and violence in him, and as the months passed, his physical strength increased with all the sudden blooming of desert grass after rain. The last garlands of puppy fat around his torso were replaced by hard muscle, and it seemed that before her eyes his chest broadened and took on a covering of springing dark curls. Though sometimes she still challenged and fought him, each time he subdued her with greater ease, and then he would force her to perform one of the tricks to which she had originally introduced him, but which he had embroidered with little sadistic twists of his own. She developed a taste for these humiliations, and she began deliberately to provoke him, until at last she succeeded beyond her expectations. It was in her cottage, the first time they had met there, because there was always the danger that Tara would drop in unexpectedly. But by now both of them were reckless. Claire waited until he was fully ripe, his eyes glazing and his lips pulled back in a rictus of ecstasy. Then she twisted and bucked, throwing him off her, and she knelt before him and jeered with laughter. He was angry, but she calmed him down. Then a few minutes later she did it again, and this time she squeezed him painfully, just as she had done the first evening at the pool. Seconds later she lay dazed, only semi-conscious, sprawled half off the bed, both her eyes rapidly closing with plum-coloured swellings, her lips broken against her teeth, the blood dripping from her nose. Sean stood over her. His face was white as ice, the knuckles of his clenched fists grazed raw, still shaking with fury. He caught her by the tresses of her dark hair and knelt over her while he forced her to take him through her split and bleeding lips. After that, there was no question but that he was her master. Claire missed 3 days of school, while the worst of the swelling subsided and the bruises faded, and then wore dark glasses to her art class. When she passed Sean at his easel, she brushed herself against him like a cat, and he waited behind again after class. Sean had gone long enough without boasting of his conquest, but Snotty Arbuthnot refused to believe him.
"You've got a screw loose if you think I can swallow that," he taunted. "You think I'm as green as I'm cabbage-looking, man? You and marshmallows? In your dreams, you mean?"
Sean had one alternative to beating him up. "Okay, then I'll prove it to you. Boy, it had better be good." "It will be," Sean assured him grimly. The following Saturday afternoon, he placed Snotty amongst the protea bushes at the head of the waterfall, and, for good measure, lent him the binoculars that his grandmother had given him for his 14th birthday. "Let's take the cushions off the couch," he suggested to Claire, when she came into the summer house. "We'll put them on the lawn, there on the bank. It'll be warmer in the sun." She agreed with alacrity. Snotty Arbuthnot was still almost inarticulate when they met at the school gates the next day.
"Hell, man, I never dreamed that people did that. I mean, unbelievable, man. When she, you know, when she actually, well, I thought I was going to die on the spot."
"Did I tell the truth?" Sean demanded. "Or did I lie to you?"
"Man, it was super titanic. Boy, Sean, I was painting maps of Africa over my sheets all last night. I kid you not. Will you let me watch again, please, Sean, please?"
"Next time will cost you money," Sean said. Even though performing to an audience had filled an exhibitionist need, Sean meant it as a refusal. But when Snotty asked without hesitation, "How much, Sean? Just name your price," Sean looked at him appraisingly. It was Shaz's policy to keep his sons on very modest pocket money, a policy that he had inherited from his own mother. "They must learn the value of money," was the family maxim. Even Snotty, whose father was only a surgeon, received 4 times the pittance that was Sean's allowance. The protection racket that Sean ran amongst the juniors, an idea he'd picked up from a George Raft movie at the Odeon, more than doubled his income. However, he was always lamentably short of hard cash, and Snotty could afford to pay. "£2, Sean suggested. He knew that was exactly his weekly pocket money, but Snotty smiled radiantly.
"You're on, man."
However, it was only when Snotty actually placed the 2 crumpled notes in Sean's fist the following Saturday morning
that Sean realized the full financial potential. There was very little chance of Claire realizing that she was on stage. The protea bushes were dense, the noise of the waterfall covered the sound of any involuntary gasps or sniggers, and anyway, once she was started, Claire was deaf and blind to all else. Sean appointed Snotty his ticket salesman and organizer. The commission he received ensured Snotty's free admission to each Saturday performance. Reluctantly, they decided to restrict admission to 10 spectators at any one session, but even that meant a take of £18 every single week. It lasted almost 3 months, which was in itself a miracle, for after the first sell-out matinee, the entire senior school was agog. The word-of-mouth publicity was so good that Snotty was able to demand cash with reservation. And even so, his booking sheet was full as far ahead as the beginning of the holes, and half the fellows were saving so frantically to try and come up with £2 that sales at the school tuck shop fell off dramatically. Snotty was trying to get Sean to agree to a midweek performance, or at least to an increase in the Saturday gate, when the first rumour reached the staff common room. While passing the windows of one of the change rooms, the history teacher had overheard two satisfied customers discussing the previous Saturday's performance. The headmaster was unable to bring himself to take the report seriously. The whole idea was patently preposterous. Nevertheless, he knew it was his duty to have a discreet word with Miss East, if only to warn her of the revolting tittle-tattle that was circulating. He went down to the art room after school, late on Friday afternoon. A most inopportune moment. Claire had by this time abandoned all sense of discretion. For her, it had become almost a self-destructive frenzy. She and Sean were in the paint store at the back of the art school, and it was some seconds before either of them realized that the headmaster was in the room with them.